Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Thank you, and welcome to the Shame-Free Zone. This is Veronica Monet, your host, and today we've got a very interesting guest. Her name is Dr. Alicia Stanton. She happens to be the author of a book called Hormone Harmony. She's also Chief Medical Officer of Body Logic MD, which is out of Glastonbury, Connecticut. And it's got a lot of credentials here. And we're talking about board certified in obstetrics, I've never been able to say that word very well, and gynecology, a fellow of the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, a diplomat of the Board of Anti-Aging Medicine, an advanced fellow in anti-aging and regenerative medicine. Now, with all of that, she's actually kind of been shifting her practice to focus entirely on preventive medicine, anti-aging, and hormone therapy. And she's got a special interest in hormone balance and its effects on menopausal symptoms, weight gain, PMS, energy levels, and stress. But she also deals with men's hormones, specifically things like low testosterone, adrenal fatigue, and low libido. Welcome to the show, Dr. Alicia Stanton.
How are you, Veronica?
You know, I'm having a pretty good day.
That's
It's beautiful out here in the Tahoe Forest. And I'm doing what most landowners do, processing my wood for the winter.
Very, very good. I've been enjoying the sun for the day, so that's also another good thing.
Good. Good. So I guess you actually had some health concerns of your own that led you on this quest for hormone harmony. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. I actually had gone through school, did my residency in OBGYN, and absolutely loved what I was doing. And it'll be 12 years this October, was diagnosed with a spinal cord tumor. So was told that if this tumor was very aggressive, I had about 2 months to live, which was hard because at that point I had an 18-month-old child and, you know, my life ahead of me. So I had the surgery, and as a result of the surgery, was paralyzed. And was able to, it was not aggressive, obviously, because it's 12 years later, but learn how to walk again and really kind of began to put my life back together because although the tumor wasn't very aggressive, it created a lot of pain and a lot of disability for me. I was able to go back to OBGYN, but it was a lot more difficult. So I started looking at things like osteopathy and acupuncture and nutrition and hormones and realized that those things worked. And what's very different is an OBGYN, you know, trained the classic way, we really didn't think a lot of those things had, you know, value.
Right.
And so in learning about the value and how they actually worked for me, I went through the American Academy of Anti-Aging and the Institute of Functional Medicine and learned a lot more about it. And two things ended up happening. One is that I got to the point where I just really couldn't stand at the operating room table for a great length of time. And since you can't, you know, plan your surgeries and how long they're going to be, that was a style cramper. And also,
wow.
I really lost my sense in, you know, and wanted to do medicine the way I had been. So I switched my practice over about 5 years ago, and
right.
I'm doing only nutrition and hormone therapy, and I love it.
Wow. Wow, and just about your personal health now, you obviously, how old's your child now that was 18 months old?
He's
when they gave
13 and a half. Yeah, he's
13
and a half.
Wow.
He's,
they were wrong.
Yeah, they were wrong. I'm here. He's here. He has a 9-year-old brother, so I was able to have another child.
Wow.
And, I was just giving him a hug a little while ago and realized he is probably 5 inches taller than I am. So I'm 5'6", so he's about 5'10", 5'11".
Amazing.
So he's a big boy.
Well, and if you had to, what do you think the biggest thing was that helped you, outlive their prognosis?
I think a couple things. One is I had a number of people who were really behind me. And, you know, I was absolutely overwhelmed by the outpouring of support that I had for, you know, all those around me that were willing to do whatever it took to help me get better. And I also realized that there were so many things that I could do. You know, again, looking at you know, massage and osteopathy and acupuncture and, you know, the surgery. So standard medicine did wonderful things for me too, but there were so many other things out there. And I think that those are the things that are keeping me healthy right now. I've gone back to, I was a cross country runner. I've gone back to running. And I'm able to do a whole lot of things now. It's great.
So you've gone from being paralyzed to actually running competitively.
Yes, and I don't run competitively anymore. I did run competitively, and at this point now it's just to kind of to get back out there. You know, I'll run a couple miles every couple days, and you know, I just go out there, and I'm not pushing anything anymore, which is really good.
Wow, yours is an amazing story. Now, do you share this in the book Hormone Harmony, or are you working on another book about your life?
Right now, I do share that in the book. The book is going to be released on September 30th, and so it's at the printers right now, but you can pre-order it. But anyway,
So Hormone Harmony is going to be coming out when?
It's coming out September 30th.
September 30th, and who's the publisher?
It is being published by Healthy Life Publishers, so it's a small publishing company, but it's on Amazon. We have our own website, so there's a lot to it. And you actually get to see a picture in the book of me and my son when he was 18 months old, because it was in the book I talk about the fact that I was staring at that picture and really made a vow to my son that I was going to stay here. I wasn't dying. And that picture's in the book, and that's one of my favorite parts.
Wow. Wow. Well, you know, that what an amazing story. I mean, even if you weren't a doctor, you know, and you weren't giving us your professional opinion, just your personal story of triumph. Amazing.
Well, it was one of those things where you just do what you have to do, and it ended up being one of the best things that ever happened to me. You know, I talk about the fact that the real paralysis of my legs, you know, pretty much let me see the paralysis of my mind and the way I had been practicing before versus the way I am now, and it's better than I ever imagined.
Wow. Okay, well, go into a little more detail about that, if you will. Like, what kind of a paralysis of your mind? What do you mean by that? We could kind of guess, but why don't you tell us?
That's okay. When I originally did my training, you know, it was funny because when I first thought about going into medicine, I thought, well, I'd love to do it because it's cut and dry. Like, there's a disease and there's a diagnosis and there's a cure. You know, that was my thinking before I realized that it's not that at all, that there's so many, you know, variations. But I would really be focused on, you know, what drug do I give this person? Like, if they come in with high blood pressure, what's the best drug? If they come in with high cholesterol, how do I treat that? And I was really focused on treating symptoms. And, I really felt like I was looking at the whole person and everything. But when I look at what I do now and spending an hour with each person when I first see them and, you know, learning about their stressors and exactly what's going on and then going to find the root of their problems, you know, are they missing nutrients? Is it a lifestyle issue? What's happening with their hormones? It's a very different way of practicing. And I never would have seen that. I thought I had it down had I not, you know, had to look at life a different way.
Hmm. Wow. So now, when you went through all this, did you, I'm assuming you were in good standing with Western medical community, have you felt any kind of alienation from that paradigm or model, or have you kind of integrated preventative with treatment? Or can you give us a little idea of what this looks like as far as your life philosophy and also maybe what you have to say about Western medicine in general?
Sure. I have so many amazing colleagues that both practice Western medicine and that practice more of the functional integrative medicine like I do. I think, you know, I'm definitely you know, kind of in a different arena as compared to a lot of my contemporaries in my area. So, you know, people find out I'm a doctor, they're like, well, what hospital are you out of? And, you know, I tell them I used to be out of this hospital, but now I don't work out of the hospitals right now. I was really respected as a surgeon and as an obstetrician when everything happened and when I left the practice. And so I think a lot of my colleagues thought, well, she's walking on the wild side, but she can't be too far out there because, you know, she knew what she was doing. And so I do have some physicians that just don't understand the way I do the hormone therapy or the way I do nutrition. But I have a lot of my colleagues who may not completely know it, but are willing to refer me to patients that, you know, that just with the standard medicine, they can't take care of as well. There are so many things that the standard medicine can do, you know, and I work with my patients, with their physicians a lot of times. But I think a lot of times they're afraid to kind of go outside the box at all, because it's very scary from a doctor's point of view. If you have a patient with high cholesterol, you know, the standard of care is you should have them on, you know, a statin drug, or you should have them on whatever. And if you don't recommend that, and God forbid the person has any issues, you know, the lawyers can go back and you know, they could potentially be sued. And that's a very real fear every day. And
don't you think that has kind of led us to a place now where the answer for everything is, you know, either a prescription or a surgery, to where it's almost as if, you know, it seems to me like, you know, when we're diagnosing breast cancer in little 11-year-old kids and doing mastectomies on them, that we've gotten a little bit hypervigilant. But that's just me. I'm a layperson looking from the outside. What do you think about that?
I think it's a great insight, and I think there's a lot of facets to it. And they're created by a number of different things. One is our population, the people expect to get, you know, cured. They expect to get something. They expect to come in with, you know, whatever is ailing them and either get a prescription or have a surgery or get it fixed. Two is when you see, you know, we're one of the only countries in the world that allows direct-to-consumer advertising by drug companies. So what ends up happening is you're inundated with these advertisements every single day that, you know, well, if you can't get an erection, take this pill. If your stomach burns when you eat a taco, take this pill. And, yeah. You know, you start thinking.
You're right. And God forbid you should just not eat the taco.
Well, and that's the thing. But nobody's getting that anymore. They're getting the fact that, you know what, I don't need to have stomach pain when I eat the taco because I can take this pill and I can still eat the taco. And there's a reason that your stomach is saying, please don't eat the taco. What I really try and focus on with people is to say, first of all, let's look at your lifestyle and let's look at how it's contributing to where you are right now. You know, people don't realize that what their stress levels are doing and what they're putting into their mouths is directly affecting their hormone levels, and they don't make that connection. So that's one of the things I work with them on.
Wow. Well, now you have actually made some, you know what? Before we go, I know we've got a really interesting topic, by the way, just for the listeners. We're going to be talking about how hormones might cause divorce. But before we get to that topic, just since this is on the news every day, do you want to weigh in a little bit on healthcare and what you think about that, or is that a topic you try to stay away from?
No, I mean, I think that it's definitely an arena that has to be changed, and I think that we need to move more towards real prevention. And, you know, we talk about the fact that, you know, I used to think I was doing preventative medicine when I was doing pap smears and mammograms. And the reality is those aren't preventative. All those do is diagnose early on. I think we really need to focus with people on, you know, what's happening with our food industry and what we're putting in our mouths and the toxins that are around us. And so all those things contribute to our health care. As far as, you know, the bill that's up before Congress and that, you know, I'm not... You know, it's unfortunate I am not as educated in what's actually in the bill. I hear all the different, you know, ways by what people are saying that, you know, I think that they're trying to create fear. So it really depends on who you're hearing things from as to what, you know, is actually in there. So I haven't gone through and read all the fine, you know, the fine stuff to have a intelligent answer on the actual bill right now.
Well, and neither do I. Or have I? You know, however, you might be able to tell us if it is the end-of-life counseling. Is that a standard form of medicine, or is
that... It's not, I mean, it's not something that I was practicing every day, thank God, because I was doing OBGYN, so I was usually starting lives. But I'm sure that a lot of the, you know, the palliative centers and the hospice centers, they probably... do those kind of, that kind of counseling, you know, normally. And, you know, I don't know if there's something specific that you're meaning that I don't get or that I don't understand, but...
Oh, no, it's gotten, they call, the conservatives are now calling them death panels, liberals are saying, no, we were, you know, everybody does this. It's just a matter of giving people the options. You know, do you want us to resuscitate at any cost?
Okay. Oh. Oh, yeah, we did that. They're called do not resuscitate orders. And, yeah, actually we recommend that everybody has some kind of documentation as to what they would like done. And most of the time, if you're young or if you're generally healthy, you don't have that. The do not resuscitate orders are usually for people that are very ill and, are really, probably going to die in the near future. And they just don't, they don't want it, the trauma of CPR and respirators and all that, because it's not going to do them any good. So that may be what they're talking about.
Yes, which I think sounds like a great idea, but I guess some people are afraid that they're going to be considered useless members of society and therefore not worth resuscitating or something. It's strange how
I don't know how that's going to get twisted, but I mean that's actually something that has been in the medical field for a long time, for a number of years. If you have somebody that is, is very, very ill or very old and just doesn't want to, run the risk of being in the hospital on a ventilator for, months to years, they'll have a do not resuscitate order.
Right, exactly. And I do believe it should be a personal choice available to everybody. But okay, you have advanced a rather controversial, I think, I don't know, let's say unique perhaps, perspective on the divorce rate in that you're attributing it to hormonal imbalances. Now, are you talking about PMS here or what?
Well, let me clarify first. I'm not attributing the whole divorce rate to hormone imbalances. What I'm saying is that you can actually, I think that there is some relationship to divorces or difficulties in relationships because of hormone imbalances and, between men and women. And it may be PMS, it may be menopausal things, and what's interesting is also that the guys can have hormone imbalances, and a lot of them don't realize that. When I talk about, divorces being affected by hormones, I really talk about the fact that if you are maybe perimenopausal, and so many of my patients talk about the fact that they just don't feel present, they're not in their bodies anymore. They're just kind of foggy, and they don't have the feelings, they don't have the emotions, they just aren't there. It's very hard to communicate effectively with your partner if you're not present. So if you have two people in a relationship that are both having issues, I think it creates a lot of potential for misunderstanding and for inability to move through things.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Well, Of course it does. Now, I'm just wondering, as somebody who, helps people with their relationship drama,
mm-hmm.
Let's say you do go to a couples coach or a therapist, and you're having problems in the relationship, and, let's pick a perhaps typical scenario where the woman might be feeling like there's things about her husband that's annoying her, but the husband would come back and say, we don't have any problems, you've just got PMS. How would one sort their way through that?
What I would look to do with them is to see, exactly what are the symptoms, what's going on. For the woman, what is she feeling? Is it truly PMS? Is it a specific time of the month? Does it fall under those criteria? And then, is it something where she's much more easily agitated? Is it something where she's depressed? What's happening with her? And then we look at her stressors. We look at her lifestyle. How much is she sleeping? All those things are very important. And then we also turn and we look at her husband. We can look at his hormone levels as well. Because it's interesting, a lot of the guys are showing signs of hormone deficiency even in their late 30s, early 40s. And
now, what is happening? Is there actually an estrogenization of men going on? Are we getting like too many birth control pills in the water supply, and men are transforming into estrogen dominant women? Or what's going on with men?
I think there's a whole bunch of things that are going on, but that is one of them. There's a lot of birth control pills and things like that, in the water. There's a lot of hormones available. Think about all the cows and the chickens and all those animals that are injected with, a lot of them are injected with estrogen especially the chickens, because you get great big chicken breasts that way. So they're eating the hormones. There are things called xenoestrogens. So a lot of the pesticides aren't estrogen, but they act like estrogens in our system. And to top it all off, when we're looking at the level of stress that both men and women are under, it's interesting, the hormone cortisol is our stress hormone. And the precursors, or the building block hormones of cortisol, are progesterone and pregnenolone. And those are also the building block hormones of our sex hormones. So if you have a lot of stress happening, you're going to start diverting all your building block hormones to making cortisol, and you're going to make less testosterone. And on top of it, as you increase your cortisol level trying to deal with that stress, you're going to increase your belly fat. So a lot of people notice an increase in belly fat. The tough thing for men, it happens in women too, is that when you have a lot of belly fat, there's enzymes, there's things in the belly fat that turn your testosterone into estrogen. So we're kind of getting estrogen-dominant men and women because of, you know, the belly fat turning the testosterone into estrogen and the xenoestrogen. So there's a lot of different things going on.
Wow. So how do you counsel your clients? I mean, we're living in this world that we're, you know, how can they get away from a contaminated food supply or water that's got estrogen in it? I mean, what, as a doctor, how do you counsel your clients? Your patients,
you know,
I should say.
Yeah, my patients. That's okay. We talk about a number of different things. We really talk about, you know, how to reduce the toxins in your system. You know, eating organic really is very important. And people don't, you know, they don't appreciate it or understand it right now, but I think it's worthwhile if you need to, you know, pay a little bit more to have organic food. That's going to help you out in the long run. There actually was an interesting article in Time magazine, the cover of Time, talked about the meat industry. And they talked about, you know, eating organic, can you afford it? And then it's like, can you afford not to? And they went through all the different things that are going on and the differences, the way the animals are raised and everything, and it's quite striking. But I think that's a key thing, is to keep the pesticides out of your system that way.
Okay.
Also drinking, oh, go ahead, filtered water.
So I'm just taking notes here. So we're talking organic food is a good way to to get rid of the over exposure to estrogen.
Exactly.
Or xenoestrogens.
Exactly. And if you can't always buy organic, the things that are showing the highest level of pesticides are peaches, apples, bell peppers, strawberries, cherries, lettuce. And so those are the things, if you have to choose between picking something organic and something's not, you know, go with things like peaches and apples and strawberries, as go with organic, because they carry more pesticides than some of the other fruits.
Okay.
Other things that you want to really focus on, we talked about organic meat. But also looking at your water, not necessarily bottled water, because a lot of the plastics have xenoestrogens in them as well. There are a lot of water filters that you can get, though, that are better for you. And you can also get, you know, filter bottles, so that if you want to carry your water around, it can be filtered, you know, right away without being in plastic. So that's also very helpful.
So well, they have those stainless steel bottles now. Which are better
are
for the environment anyway, because then you're not throwing away plastic bottles all the time. So, but how would you filter the water? Should you just get a Brita?
You can do a Brita. There are some you know, higher end filters as well, but you can certainly get, you know, the Brita pitchers or the Brita filter that's right on your faucet. Or like I said, you can get some higher end filters, and a lot of the water bottles have filters in them as well. So those work very well. One of the other places you want to make sure you filter is your shower water. And
no.
What's interesting is, it's interesting that with our showers, especially if it's, you know, city water or you know, town water, there's a lot of chlorine in that water. And chlorine is very, very highly absorbed into our skin, and the hotter the water, the more highly absorbed it is. So a lot of people don't even realize that they're showering, they're taking chlorine baths, essentially. We care about that why? Because chlorine ends up being a toxin to our bodies as well. So we have to, and, you know, the chlorine gas, those kinds of things you can breathe in. But if you're, you know, if you're on standing under hot chlorine water, your body is taking in the chlorine.
So let's bring this home for people, because, you know, most of us, we've heard everything's toxic. The sunshine's toxic, and pretty soon people's eyes just kind of glaze over. So they say, oh, yeah, whatever, chlorine's toxic. How is it toxic? Like, what's something tangible that it could do to you?
What it does is it can change some of the chemical reactions in your body. So it displaces it into the chemistry, but it displaces certain ions or certain parts of your in your body, in your system, so that some of your reactions don't work as well. So some people, you know, end up having irritated lungs, those kinds of things. It can create irritation within your body and make the reactions not work as well. So it's harder for me to say, okay, you know, this is it. You know, if you think about it, if anyone's ever, you know, had a really bad experience mixing ammonia and bleach, you make bad chlorine gas. And so that's a very intense, example, because they get, you know, very wheezy and their eyes water and everything. You don't, obviously don't have that happen in the shower, but you are absorbing a small amount all the time whenever you're in a hot shower like that.
Wow. Okay, so the things do actually get absorbed through the skin, right? So isn't it kind of important what kind of things you even rub on yourself as far as body lotions go?
And that's another thing to look at. And people don't understand how easily things are absorbed. It's very, very fascinating because if I'm using some of the hormone therapies, some of them I actually do have them rub on their skin as creams. And if they're doing the testing for the hormone therapy, some of the testing we'll do is saliva testing, and that's very good at picking up things that come through the skin. And what'll be interesting is I'll do testing on patients, and I may get a very, very high level of cortisol, and, you know, they won't have a lot of stressors, they won't have a lot of things happening. And I'll ask them if they have used any hydrocortisone cream, if they've had any itches or rashes or whatever. And sometimes they'll say, oh, yes, I did. I had, you know, a little poison ivy or whatever, and that'll show up. But what's even more fascinating is if they tell me that their child had some rash. And so all they did was rub it on their child, and it soaked through their skin.
Wow.
So our skin, it's a great way. It's really our way of communicating with the environment. So things come in and out of our skin all the time. So one of the things we talk about is, you know, really looking for, you know, high quality skin lotions, cosmetics, all those kinds of things, and make sure that they don't have a lot of contaminants in them.
Right. Now, would it be good to get organic skin creams then, or maybe at least just avoid all the chemicals, or suggest there?
Definitely. To look for the purest creams, the things with the least fragrances, those kinds of things. Because basically, the more different chemicals you put on your body, the more you have a chance that, you know, something, everybody's different. And, you know, medicine is actually catching up with this now. We call it genomic medicine. We're actually looking at how your genes react with the environment. And so, you know, 99.9% of people may not react to a specific chemical, but for, you know, 0.1% of people, it may make a difference for them. So, you know, the rule of thumb is just limit your exposure as best you can. And I don't think we should all run around in bubbles, because that's ridiculous. But by the same token, if you can, like I said, you know, look for, you know, creams that have fewer ingredients and more high quality things, so that you're limiting that exposure.
Okay. Wow. So, you know, you sound like you're very much on board for kind of the holistic, organic, more alternative health modalities. Do you feel that way about yourself? Or?
I do. And it's funny because the more I look at things, this is what I talked about, you know, the paralysis of my mind before. I didn't really understand how much all of these things mattered and, you know, how much it really meant to us to, you know, to limit the number of, you know, chemicals we come in contact with and everything. And I'm, you know, I do my best, but I'm not perfect with it either. So, you know, I understand how people, you know, are like, oh, I can't do all that. But I would just say if you can limit more than you are right now, that's a step in the right direction. I really firmly believe that a lot of our health issues, a lot of our weight issues and those things are related to the toxins we have in our environment right now.
Well, I agree, of course, but so listeners, I just want to remind you, this is live, and if you've got any questions for Dr. Alicia Stanton, she is a highly trained Western doctor, chief medical officer, as a matter of fact, and author of a book, Hormone Harmony, which is coming out at the end of this month. But you've got her live right now, and you can ask her some questions. Our toll-free number here is 888-228-4494. That's 888-228-4494. And I finally got my computer back up and running, so you can find me over on Facebook and Twitter. And I have been dropping you a few little notes. If you are feeling shy, don't feel like picking up that phone, and you just want to weigh in a little bit on this whole thing about marriage and happiness and hormones, drop me a little line on Facebook or Twitter, and I'll read it on the air. Okay, so Dr. Stanton, what are you hoping that the book Hormone Harmony is going to accomplish? You know, as an author, I know when I write a book, I feel like it covers something that's never been covered before, or at least not in the way that I am doing it. And I'm hoping to shift people's thinking about a particular topic. So I'm just wondering, what do you think your contribution is to health with this book that makes the book stand out as being unique?
What I really want the book to accomplish is to allow people to understand that there's a connection between, you know, how they're living and what they're putting in their mouths and their hormone levels. And that, you know, my sense is from the 80s on, really, when we changed the food guide pyramid and we all started being afraid of fat and you know, going more for the carbs, thinking that was a better way to go, a lot of us, you know, changed the way we handle insulin. We changed the way we handle cortisol, and it really changed our hormone makeup. So women going into menopause right now are very different than women that have ever gone into menopause in history. You know, essentially we have an entirely different population than we've ever seen before. So, you know, the doctors have to, you know, be able to treat these people differently, and we have men that are having issues earlier than ever before.
Hold on. Let's back up for a minute. How is it that women are going into perimenopause and menopause different than women ever have before? How is it different?
How is it? Because it's really tied into, again, I think stress levels and our diets. So our diets now, like I said, back in the 80s when we all freaked out and no fat, and so we all ate pretzels and bagels and, you know, all that kind of stuff because we didn't want to get fat. Over the years, over the next 20 years, a number of us developed what's called insulin resistance, where we've had so many carbohydrates, so much, you know, processed food going through our system for so long, our body has stopped listening to the insulin. And what happens with that is you get an imbalance in insulin and cortisol, and it pulls away the building block hormones so that when we have less testosterone, because of the fat, we have more estrogen, and because progesterone, which is supposed to normally balance estrogen, is a building block hormone for cortisol. We don't have enough of that. So I have a lot of women that I started seeing, even in the OBGYN years, who in their late 30s, early 40s, were having really significant perimenopause symptoms, and nobody really believed them. They said, well, you're too young, you know, you're going crazy, have an antidepressant, you'll be fine. And what I'm realizing is that if we can catch that in these women and have them eating more, you know, complex carbohydrates, vegetables, you know, high fiber fruits, less processed sugars, we can start to shift that, you know, balance back a little bit so that we don't have as many problems going through menopause and perimenopause.
So let me see if I understand you. First of all, you think that we're eating differently than we used to, but it also sounded like you were saying that some of the ways that our fourth parents, you know, grandparents and grand whatever could eat, it doesn't work for us now because our environment is more stressful and more polluted?
I think that that is another component of it. On top of us eating differently than our parents and grandparents, we're eating food that's, you know, that has hormones in it, has a lot more pesticides in it, and we're living in an environment where there's a lot more stress, and it's not just the emotional stress, because I think there was a lot of stress in the Depression, there's a lot of stress, you know, all different times here during history. But you also have to understand that we now have a lot of even electronic stress that, you know, we didn't have before. If you think about our computers and our cell phones and, you know, and our, you know, beepers back in the day and all those different things, that kind of, there's different energies and different things associated with those that still affect us, and it ends up being a different kind of stress. So there's a lot of things that are going on, I think, to create the situation. Does that
make sense? Well, yeah, I think so. I guess I'm still getting that it's probably related something to the shifts in our environment too. Like, you know, I've even heard we're probably not getting as much nutritional content to our food because of the way it's raised and what's mm-hmm. happened to the soil being over-farmed.
Those are all true things, I think, and I think, like I said, that they matter, and where the difference is, and why I'm saying that we have people that are going through it differently than any other time in history, is a lot of our moms, you know, had a couple hot flashes or whatever, but it wasn't, you know, didn't seem like they were as, you know, completely overwhelmed with things as a mm-hmm. lot of women that come through and come to my practice now. And granted, they're self-selecting. The ones that are really, really having issues are the ones that are coming to see me. So I see
true.
A very skewed population. But, you know, you just see it more and more where, you know, women are really, you know, just struggling so much more than it seems that they ever had been. And we're starting to see, like I said, a lot more men as well. And it's interesting because the symptoms with the men, it's a much more insidious kind of thing. Women cycle, so we can have some distinct variations in our hormones and get a time period of real symptoms. Men don't cycle, and if you have just a kind of a slow, steady decline in testosterone, you get men that just get a little bit more depressed. They lose their edge. They're more fatigued. Their libido may go down. They may not be sleeping well. They may snore, or they may, you know, just stay up at night and not be able to sleep. And all of these things contribute, you know, and it's a slow thing. So after, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 years of this, they suddenly realize that there may be something wrong, but they may just be thinking they're getting their old, too. So it's a harder thing for them.
Well, and let's talk about the men for just a little bit more, too, because I've heard somewhere that men actually go through some kind of menopause. Is that true, or is that just a fib or some kind of a wives' tale?
It's not that it's a wives' tale. What happens is men have a natural decline in testosterone that does occur. And so they call that andropause, you know, but we've been starting to coin the term, you know, manopause or whatever. It's very different from a woman because a woman has an actual, you know, time period where she literally runs out of eggs and her ovaries stop functioning. So that's true menopause. Andropause is just like a slow dropping of the overall testosterone level. And, you know, that's kind of where they talk about the grumpy old men, the men that are just, again, they've kind of lost their zest and they're a little tired and everything. What I've been seeing is that it's just happening so much earlier. I have guys that come in to see me that, you know, have read it on the Internet, and they're like, oh, my gosh, I think I have the symptoms of low testosterone. And they'll come in, and their testosterones are horrifying. They're, you know, I have somebody come in last week, and the normal range for testosterone, it's a wide range. The range is, you know, 250 to 1,100. And so 250 is where you'd expect to see some 90-year-old guy kind of thing. And I see 30-year-olds coming in all the time at like 270, 280, when they should be around 600 or 700. And they're
Whoa.
Just so stressed and so depleted.
And you think this is happening to men because of the environment then?
I think it's the environment. I think it's what they're eating. I think it's their stress levels. I think it's all those things combined, and we just have a perfect storm going on right now.
Wow. That's a horrific thing that's happening to men. I mean, if they're in their 30s and their testosterone levels are more like they're in their 90s, that's really sad.
And you know,
what do you do with guys like that? Do you get some guy in his 30s that comes to you and says, "Hey, I think I have some of these symptoms," and you go, "Oh my God, your testosterone's like you were 90 years old." What would you do with him?
We would do a couple things. We would look at, you know, what's going on in his life. We'd look at what's happening in his diet. We'd look at other hormone levels, what's happening with his adrenals, with his thyroid, how much estrogen does he have, and does he want to have kids? Because all of those things matter. If he wants to have children, then we would look at other ways to try and naturally raise his sperm or his testosterone, because if you give a man testosterone, it will naturally lower his sperm count. So I don't, you know, run around and just slap testosterone on everybody because, you know, you got to take into account a lot of different things.
Now, wait a minute. This sounds kind of counterintuitive. You're telling me if you give a man testosterone, it will lower his sperm count.
It does, because what happens is if you give a man testosterone, it shuts down some of his natural production, or it shuts down some of the hormones that are going to stimulate sperm production. So actually testosterone is a reasonably good male birth control method, but not one that I'd recommend, so don't try it at home.
So are the stories true? The guys who take the testosterone so they can become super, you know, bodybuilders, shrivel their gonads? Is that what happens?
They definitely do, yes. And the problem with those guys that are, you know, doing that off the internet or whatever is they can create a situation where they permanently shut down their natural production of testosterone. You know, and then they have an issue. They need therapy, you know, from forever because they just don't make enough anymore.
Wow.
So it's a hard thing.
Yeah. So it sounds like the young men need to start paying attention to the kind of food they're eating, for one. And have you noticed that a lot of the food advertising seems to target the very demographic you're talking about, men in their 30s, and encourage them to get those supersized TV dinners or, you know, all-you-can-eat shrimp and steak or pizza with Oreo cookies on it?
Yes. And, you know, I think that they're really shooting to have every demographic, you know, do that, really. The more people that can eat, the merrier. But I do think that what we push as being cool and in usually is not something that's necessarily good for your body. You know, I think about all the energy drinks, you know, the Red Bull, the Monster, all that other kind of stuff. You know, there's a lot of sugars in there. There's a lot of stimulants in there that stress your adrenal glands out, and that can create, you know, more problems. So we're not looking at, you know, advertisers that are really thinking about the health of the population.
No, and it seems like they have found, obviously, you know, they put a lot of research into figuring out who's going to buy this stuff. And, mm-hmm. and you know, it's not, they don't necessarily target young women, because I think young women a lot of times are worried about whether or not they're going to be able to fit into their genes. But, you know, male fashions have really gone in this direction of kind of hiding the male body. I remember when in the 70s when I was in high school, you could actually uh-huh. see a guy's butt.
yes.
And men were thinner. Even John Travolta was thinner then.
Mm-hmm. True. It's very true. All skinny.
And now it seems like the young men are all packing a lot of extra weight, even our young soldiers. Like, if you look at footage of soldiers from the 60s even, mm-hmm. you know, from the Vietnam War, 60s and 70s, the soldiers and what they looked like after going through boot camp, they were usually really ripped.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, our soldiers, you know, no disrespect, but they seem to all be packing a lot of weight.
And that, you know, it goes to what we're eating. Again, the interesting thing is, even if we're not sleeping well, that puts on weight. They've actually been able to show that if you take someone who's completely normal, has normal insulin response, and like their body's listening to insulin, and you sleep deprive them 8 nights in a row, you're going to turn them insulin resistant just by sleep depriving. So you talk about our lifestyles, but also the toxins that are in our environment. When we take them in our body, the way that we safely keep them away from all the important stuff is we pack them around the fat. So we hang on to fat to block toxins from our body. So you look
Wait,
at how
say
many
that
toxins
again.
People
we do what with our
we,
fat?
We use our fat to wall off our toxins. So we hold our toxins, we hold the poisons in our body in the fat.
Yes,
so all the
sometimes when you actually, you know, like if you put on 10 pounds and then you go to take that weight off or whatever weight, but when you're taking mm-hmm. fat off your body, you can actually get sick because a lot of those toxins are being released, huh?
Exactly. That's why if you're, you know, attempting to lose weight, you really want to be drinking a lot of fluids, making sure you're going to the bathroom a lot. You want to flush your kidneys, flush your liver, because you're releasing a lot of toxins, and you have to be able to process them and get rid of them.
Wow. So, we've got a few minutes left here, and I think it'd be kind of nice to bring it home about how these hormonal imbalances can affect our relationships. And it doesn't have to just be like marriage. It could be relationships with your children, your pet, mm-hmm. yourself, your job. What do you have to say about that? I'm imagining that you probably had a whole chapter about that in your book.
I think it's all tied together. One of the hardest things when I listen to my patients talk is listening to them talk about, especially the women, how frustrated they are with the fact that they yell at their kids. Mm-hmm. That they just don't have the patience. They snap at them, and instead of just saying, please listen to me or please put that down, they're yelling and screaming, and they feel like they don't have control. And that can be related to, estrogen and progesterone. It can be related to adrenals, because if your adrenals aren't working well, then you are exhausted and you're so tired, and it's just hard to function. People that are concerned about their relationships at work and with their jobs, again, if you can't concentrate and you can't focus and your mind is wandering, you're not doing your adequate job. And really, your relationship with your spouse or with your partner, it's critical. Like I said, if you're exhausted, if you're not present, if you're a man and you're feeling like you lost your edge, it starts getting very easy to misinterpret things that are said or to just not feel like you're the same person that you were when you married or started the relationship. So I think that it contributes to a lot of things.
Wow. It's interesting because when I was married, I've been divorced now for 5 years, but I was married for about 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband kept telling me that I had PMS, mm-hmm. and I kept telling him that he was a sexist pig. So then we got a dog. We got this dog, and then the dog started telling me that I had PMS. And, of course, he didn't use words. He used doggy language, which was basically that every time, just 3 days before my period, mm-hmm. my energy would shift, my tone of voice would shift. I would be completely mm-hmm. oblivious to it. I'd be saying and doing the exact same things, but the energy was totally different. And yeah. all of a sudden, a correction or a command that I had been giving my dog 24 hours before mm-hmm. was being received with fear and trepidation, whereas the day before it was okay when I said that to him.
Wow.
And I was like, what is wrong with the dog? And of course I thought, well, there's nothing wrong with the dog. I think my husband was right. I do have PMS. And the way I always said it was like, PMS doesn't like manufacture bad feelings. It just puts it on the loudspeaker.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I may be annoyed, I may be irritated, I may be tired, but when PMS would come in there and suddenly put it on a loudspeaker, so it became an unmanageable thing.
Yeah, and it's very hard. And if you look at that and then, potentially add to the fact that the man is coming from a point where he's testosterone deficient and very easily agitated and, again, feeling like he's lost his edge and he's exhausted, you can see how these people that truly love each other can just totally blow up. And if that happens over the course of a couple years, a relationship disintegrates because their hormones aren't balanced.
Right. But it's really hard to get men to seek medical advice, isn't it? Don't they kind of have a reputation for going to the doctor only when something's actually bleeding or broken?
Most of them do, but what's interesting is a lot of them are going online and looking at it quietly themselves. My practice is now about 35% men. And what's interesting is that they're starting to realize that, some of the most important stuff about them is broken. And it may not be necessarily, a bone or nothing's bleeding, but a lot of them are starting to say, wait a minute, I'm not who I usually am, and I want to change it. And it's really been amazing.
Well, that's a fabulous trend. So online actually is helping people then It's interesting. I found the same thing with my radio show. People don't want to pick up the phone, but they're more than happy to say something on Twitter or Facebook.
Mm-hmm. It's true. No one wants to talk anymore. We just want to type it in there.
Exactly. Well, I think a lot of men felt that, and I don't know, you'll have to tell me if this is true, but men thought that getting help is kind of like unmasculine or something. They're just supposed to tough it out.
And that's our culture. We big boys don't cry, all that stuff. So they suck it up. But, like I said, I just have so many of them are coming in now that are like, I started looking online and I realized that you were talking about me. And I just want to see what I can do to feel better. And it's amazing how many are coming in now.
Well, I think that's a fabulous trend.
So
with our remaining couple of minutes here, do you want to tell us a little bit about how we're going to be able to get this book? And before you do, tell us why we want the book. Just if you can summarize it for us. What's the big appeal for both men and women to read Hormone Harmony?
I think the appeal for the book is that it's going to give you really a game plan as to how you want to, specifically what you want to eat, specifically why you want to eat things. I have a chapter in there on toxins, and so it talks about some of the toxic things that we talked about. It talks about, how the diet triggers create problems for you, exercises, different supplements, what are bioidentical hormones, which we didn't even get a chance to really talk about, frequently asked questions, and just, it's a really good way to just put it all together and, move through perimenopause and PMS, and for the guys, some of the guy issues.
Which are, again, low testosterone.
Low testosterone. So, low testosterone, guys also suffer from adrenal fatigue and thyroid issues. But
and then
guys,
estrogen dominance, I would think that would be a big concern for men, too.
That's a very big concern. If the guys start getting a lot more belly fat and man boobs and...
I was just going to say, estrogen dominance give men boobs?
That's exactly what happens. If you're on the beach, I can point out estrogen dominance right away because it's all the man boobs, they all have estrogen dominance. So.
Wow. I think that's just so sad. I see more man boobs nowadays than I've ever have in my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, I feel like we've almost... I think if our forefathers were to show up, the 500 years ago, the rough men who came to this continent to try to hew out a living on it before it was ever civilized, and I'm not sure they probably wouldn't like, where are the men? Where'd your men go?
Yeah, and the thing is, we're all starting to look alike. We're all kind of androgynous. We all are starting to look alike, so it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, and I don't know. Maybe that's just part of how the species is evolving. But these secondary sex characteristics really have kind of evened out and disappeared somewhat. Now, do you think that's hormones?
Oh, definitely. I think it's for a whole bunch of reasons, we're really decreasing the amount of testosterone in both men and women, and we're increasing the estrogen, and we're all just starting to look and act alike. So it's pretty fascinating.
Okay, so it's not evolution, it's degradation.
I think so. I really do.
It's de-evolution. We are de-evolving.
Devolving, I think that's the word.
De-evolving. We're all going to wind up looking like little babies fresh out of mommy's womb. Little round blobs with no hair.
That's exactly right. That's funny.
Well, your book comes out September 24th. And again, the publisher is Healing what?
It's Healthy Life Library.
Get it on Amazon. What's your web address?
The web address is hormoneharmony.org. So that org. And if they go to hormoneharmony.org, they can get a $5 discount. It's a hardcover book. So on Amazon, it's $24.95. Hormoneharmony.org, it'll be $19.95.
Fabulous. So glad you're doing this. I think it's just so important that doctors that are as expertly trained and experienced as you are able to start weighing in on the idea that we need to start doing preventative medicine and taking care of ourselves before we get sick.
Thank you.
So, thanks. Thank you very much, Dr. Stanton.
Hi, Veronica. You have a great night, okay?
I sure will. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you.